The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this June 10th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. It is a jam-packed show for you today, and it's going to be a little different than what we've been doing on Tuesday afternoons with Auburn baseball season coming to an end. We've been having a ton of interviews all season long. I mean, we've had this basically since the season started between players and assistant coaches and head coach Butch Thompson. Somebody has joined us every single week. And so we just appreciate Auburn baseball and everybody involved there and George Nunnally, the SID, for helping us get that set up all season long. And so we've normally had that for you, but that has come to an end. And so it's wide open on this Tuesday, but even in the offseason, there's a lot going on, and we're going to talk about a ton of stuff on the show today. And I say we because my man is in the studio as he is every single day. Christian Griffin, how are you, sir? Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Yeah, you mentioned it. No more Auburn baseball, but a whole lot of still baseball going on. We'll have our first look at Omaha here in just a little bit as another team pulled off a pretty big upset.
Yeah, they did.
Last night in Game 3. You now have all of the matchups. You now have all of the finalized odds to win the College World Series, but a lot of college football talk in our number one with Auburn picking up a couple big-time recruits. Also, some news along Brian Batty. I don't know if everybody has seen the video that Auburn has posted or the awards that he has won, but we're going to talk about those. A really, really cool award and a nice job by college football recognizing somebody like him like they do every single year. And then some top NFL prospects for this upcoming season. Is Jackson Arnold on the list? Who are some other big-name quarterbacks that are on the list? Who is somebody that we think is going to have a very big NFL career and a very big year this year in college football? And then a little bit of Braves updates, some, I guess, Red Sox, if we need to mention those as well for you.
That's Major League Baseball news. It just happens to be around the Red Sox, okay? It's big news when the top prospect gets called up. Sure. I don't care that he had a bad night, all right? He still got called up, and it was a cool moment.
He let the ball go under his glove in right field.
He did draw a walk at some point, though, so that
he got an RBI too.
Makes, I did see that. He did. He had a walk and an RBI, 0 for 4, walk RBI, and he had a terrible play in the field, but that's okay.
But no, we're going to start it off with a whole lot of college football, and so we're going to open up the text box here early to get the show started. 334-321-1390 if you would like to be a part of On the Line, and the text box as well, 334-784-1067. If you'd like to join in on the conversation, give us your thoughts, give us your ideas. And that's where we started off with Auburn football picking up two big-time commits yesterday, Jacob.
Yes, and so again, as you said, give us a call, 334-321-1390, or shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And yes, Auburn continues to add to a recruiting class that is slowly climbing up the rankings. And I want to start there before we talk about the two guys in particular, sure, because there seems to be some concern, not as much as we've seen in the past, but there is some concern with Auburn fans right now of, well, where are all the recruits? Where are all the commits, right? Where are all the signees? I mean, where is everybody? Because this Auburn class has been in the 50s, the 40s. It's just now climbing through the 30s in terms of the 2026 class. And you start comparing it to what else is happening. And it's like, well, USC is the top-ranked recruiting class in the country. They've got, I mean, they have 28 kids committed to their class. Why doesn't Auburn have anything like that? Well, I think there's some serious conversations going on within each recruit and their camp of maybe we should hold out on this Auburn team for just a little bit longer just to see if Hugh Freeze delivers what he says he's going to deliver and what he's been saying that he's going to deliver on top of the NIL and now this whole revenue sharing thing too, which I think a lot of it is going to play into. But I tell Auburn fans to not calm down, but don't overreact. Don't stress yet. It's June. This is a big month for Auburn, and it's already been a big month with big names on campus and a couple of guys who have already picked the Tigers. He had a flip for Auburn. You also had just a straight-up win and a commitment. We'll start with the three-star running back Eric Perry, the three-star running back Eric E.P. Perry, which is pretty cool. His initials E.P. A guy who is committed to Auburn. He was offered a while back, and he visited in the spring period, and now he says he wanted to play at the SEC, wanted to play at the highest level, and had a chance to do so. He decides that he is going to come to Auburn and get a three-star running back in the class of 2026. Just next door, South Haven, Mississippi, 6 foot tall, 195 pounds, a guy that chose Auburn over some smaller schools, I would say, but Auburn was the biggest one on the list, and he decides to head to the Plains, and he'll be in the 2026 recruiting class.
Yeah, said that he loved everything that Derek Nix had to offer, said that he played a really, really big role in making his decision. Going back to what you were talking about, though, as well, of you don't have that traditional Big Cat weekend anymore because that's now a dead period, and there's so much less value in the words committed nowadays, to where when you're talking about Auburn, who sits right now as the, I just had it pulled up, 37th overall team in the 2026 recruiting rankings, go from 47th to 37th now with their eight commits. Five of them are four stars, three of them are three stars. But yeah, you're right. It's the proof of concept. It is the needing to see it on the field. And again, everything should line up to where there is a whole lot of success on the field. But Auburn has done a lot of their work when it comes to recruiting in between the early signing day period, maybe right before it, and then with national signing day, right? I mean, right as the season has come to a close. And that's why we've talked about this year being so, so important, because 6-6 and 9-3 could make the difference in a top 5 or 10 recruiting class and then pushing your way out of a top 15 or a top 20 recruiting class just simply because of what the proof of concept, what the win-loss record is going to look like. Everything, as we mentioned, should line up to where there's a whole lot of success, and you're hoping to see some of those bigger names that continue to wait and hold their name out even longer from a commitment. You hope that some of those guys can find their name with an AU logo next to it come the end of the season.
Right. So when you start looking up at recruiting rankings and you see teams like Stanford and Boston College and Vanderbilt and teams like that that are above you right now, it doesn't really hold all that much. I mean, look at who's below Auburn. Michigan, Oregon, Alabama is at 47th right now, according to 247. Like, it's about quantity and quality at the same time. And for so long, Christian, we've talked about recruiting as, well, if you have a lot of guys early, you're just getting quantity versus over quality. Mm-hmm. And then if you only have four or five guys, well, you know, Auburn only has eight commits. That's some of the lowest across the country. They're going for quality instead of quantity. Why do we have to go for one or the other? Why can't you have both and just slowly build your class? I think that is what is happening here with Auburn's 2026 class. Again, eight total commits in it right now, with some four stars, three stars, like you mentioned, and Eric Perry is the latest addition. But you're looking at somebody like Ezekiel Harris, who has been committed to Auburn almost a year ago. July of last year is when he decided to commit to the Tigers. Devin Carter is another guy, the wide receiver from Georgia, who's been committed since the beginning of January. I mean, you have some dudes in here, Jamichael Garrett, Jadarius Tootle. These guys committed almost a year ago. And the fact that Auburn has kept them committed is, I think, just as big of a success as getting somebody like Eric Perry right now in June, is the fact that you are getting these names and continuing to bring in the biggest of names on official visits this past weekend, all throughout this weekend beyond. June has become that month. You have to change the way you're thinking as a fan right now. June has become the recruiting month for football, because July is dead. That's no longer. And then the football season starts. And sure, you can take visits and things like that, but as I've talked about too, with football, basketball, and beyond, so many of these kids have decided they want their recruitment to be done by the time their high school season starts. Whether that's football in August, September, or whether that's basketball in October, November, they want the recruitment process to be done. No more of this, let's play all season and tease it the whole way. They're done with that. They don't want to deal with it anymore. And so Auburn's taking advantage right now. You bring in Eric Perry, again, the three-star running back in the class of 2026. But that's not all Auburn did this week, because you've go ahead and built for even further down the road in the future, as you get a four-star safety from down in Mobile, the Williamson High School kid who is still got a couple of years to play, 6 foot tall, 165 pounds in the class of 2027. Jalen Scott commits to Auburn, but he flips from Florida State. Now, there are several ways to react to something like this. A, big time stuff. He's committed to Auburn, four-star, one of the best players. He's a top five player in the state of Alabama. They're saying he's a top 100 player across the country. He's been committed to Florida State for a little bit, and now he flips to Auburn. All that's great news. But it's also a kid that's going to be in the 2027 class who just flipped once, which means he is liable to do it again.
Yeah, I mean, again, you don't look at it's very, very nice to be able to get the commits, because you feel like once that's the case, you don't have to work as hard to get them because you already have them. It's more so about keeping these commits. And again, with the 2027 class still being quite a little bit away, it's still a very, very good confidence boost for everything moving forward, as Auburn is the 17th ranked team, if you want to go that far, in the 2027 class, with that being their one commit, the four-star. But again, so much of it goes down, as you were mentioning, in this month of June, to where either kids want to go ahead and have this recruiting process done, or they want to quote-unquote have it done but still be able to go on all of the visits, and then teams come in and do that dirty work. When you're looking at USC right now, who leads in the 2026 class, their win total is projected 7.5, right? I mean, how long until it is in the USC recruit or decommit train? You feel
they've
like
they've already
just
seen
bound
a couple.
To happen.
Yeah.
Yes, and again, especially if you don't hit that win total, just because of how college works, to where you almost want what Auburn is being able to do. Unfortunately, you haven't seen it on the field, but the recruiting class, the recruiting strengths have not been any sort of concern whatsoever. The only thing Auburn needs is to be able to sit there and get all of these commits, or have kids that are possibly willing to flip or willing to pick up the phone and hear what other teams have to offer, or are holding out through early signing day, and Auburn be able to go, yes, look at our proof of concept now, right? Look at this 9-3 record. Look at this 8-4 record with a win over Alabama, or a win over Georgia, or this hot streak that you were able to get. Think about the visit that you were able to go on. The proof of concept and the win-loss record is the only thing holding Auburn back right now, which you feel like is what you've brought up, where it doesn't feel like there's any need to panic whatsoever, because you feel like right now, in June, you're getting what you need to do with these big-time names, and then they're holding out to see what happens on the field, and then Auburn can throw that final punch.
You look at the 2026 rankings, again, according to 247. It's the site I use. You can use whichever one that you would like. USC's at 1, Notre Dame 2, Clemson 3. Clemson's done an incredible job. Clemson has done an incredible job. And we bash on the ACC quite a bit, and we bash on Dabo Swinney quite a bit too, because he held out for a long time with NIL and transfer portal and basically playing the game the way that everybody else had decided to play it. They held off because he thought he was good enough. He thought he could get by without it. And to his credit, he realized he couldn't. He realized they weren't good enough. He realized that Clemson has to play on the same playing surface as everybody else. And we laughed at him. We pointed fingers and made jokes about Dabo. And he said, all right, I'll play by the same rules. And Clemson, just like that, is back in the national picture with top recruiting classes, top transfer portal classes, and I think one of the best teams in college football to start the year in 2025. We laughed for a long time, and once they caught up to the times, here come the Clemson Tigers once again.
Yeah, you feel like there still is a much bigger emphasis on the high school rankings rather than the transfer portal rankings, and you've heard plenty of people talk about what week one in college football is going to look like, right? The battle of Death Valleys with LSU and Clemson. It's a battle of high school development versus the transfer portal because of everything that LSU did in this offseason building around Garrett Nussmeier. It's going to truly be the tale of two different sides. But Clemson, you can see they're going after high school rankings right now. 12 4-stars, 6 3-stars ranked third in the 2026 class. I mean, yeah, you mentioned it. They're up there with the USC, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Penn State, and Georgia. I feel like that's doing a pretty good job in the ACC.
And just to continue the conversation on teams that are in, what, top 10, top 15 of the recruiting class that just seem out of place, USC at the top spot, Rutgers at the 8th spot,
yeah, Arkansas 22 at, commits.
Yeah, Arkansas at 9, Louisville at 13, Kansas at 15, I mean Cal at 19, Minnesota's at 20. I mean, these teams are ranked a little bit higher because they do have more commits. I mean, Rutgers, just looking at the list, I believe they have the second most commits of anybody in the country right now at 22. They do. They have the second
just behind
most.
USC.
Yeah, the second most in the country. And remember this idea that we've talked about where it is not uncommon anymore. It's actually almost advertised of paying kids to commit and hold their commit. And then by the end of it, they're allowed to do whatever they want to do, but they're paid to come on visits. They're paid to be committed. They're paid to be put on a graphic. Like, that's a real thing. Let's not act like it's not happening. That's a real thing that's happening in college football. I'm not saying that exact thing is happening with Rutgers or USC or Minnesota, right, who's in a top 20 recruiting class. But I'm not saying it either. I mean, it's just, it's a different era. It's a different world. And until it all goes through, until they're signed, until they're on campus, until they've been through some practices and been through the process, I mean, it is what it is. And I hate it to be this way, but recruiting is just not what it used to be. It's still a massive industry. It's still a really big deal, and you still have to be really, really good at it. But gone are the days of that 5-star, 4-star committing or flipping or taking the visit or whatever and the whole fan base going absolutely nuts and watching commitment videos and things. I mean, those days are gone because they don't mean anything, because commits and visits and recruiting, all of that has been watered down so bad. It's the boy who cried wolf, right? You get burned enough times, you're just going to quit giving into it. You're going to quit getting excited about it until you have to get excited when it's finalized. That's just kind of where we are.
You get excited when the spring portal entry closes.
Yeah.
And that's when you realize, oh, okay. All right. It is confirmed that we do have this player for the year. But yeah, you mentioned it with the boy who cried wolf. I mean, you're almost numb to the idea of the commitment videos or even just the commitment pages on social media that post every single time a 2.5-star player commits to this school just simply because it's worth a graphic and it's going to get the clicks, it's going to get the views. It doesn't bring excitement to the world of college football like it used to, and that's what we've talked a little bit about of I don't think it would ever happen, but man, you want to bring excitement back to recruiting, make it to where if you commit,
you're in.
You're stuck.
Well, that's what Clemson, remember, that's what they tried to do. That's what Dabo's policy was if you're committed to Clemson, you don't visit anywhere else. You don't talk to anybody. If you are a commit to Clemson, you are a Clemson Tiger.
And there's no argument to going and looking at other schools, anything like that, but you totally understand it of, hey, Jacob, I am committed to you. I am not going anywhere, but this other school over here is just calling my name, and I just want to go see what they have. Mm-hmm. That's something you do without that word committed, without their logo next to your name.
Well, I think, too, 10 or 15, 20 years ago when revenue sharing and NIL and all this wasn't a thing, when I know the under-the-table stuff, but we're not talking that in specifics here. 20 years ago when you were going through the recruiting process, it truly was this coach versus that coach, this staff versus that staff, their facilities versus our facilities. And so the mindset of Dabo and Clemson was, well, we're one of the best in the country, and we believe our product is the best in the nation. We don't feel like you need to go look at anywhere else. You committed to us, then you're committed to the best of the best. Or if a kid is in a battle with, you know, Auburn and Bama and LSU, it's like, okay, all it comes down to is the intangibles of a coach or a coaching staff, or the classes or the campus or
the family.
Yeah, exactly. All the things that you would hope a kid chooses for. Nowadays, it's, well, we all compete at the same level with those things, but it's an all-out bidding war. So all of that mindset has changed, too. Fact of the matter is, though, Auburn still seems to be navigating this stuff pretty well and still continuing to recruit at a high level for 2026, 2027, and beyond, as Hugh Freeze picks up a three-star running back for 2026 and flips a four-star safety in the class of 2027 from Florida State to the Auburn Tigers. June is a mid-month for recruiting. We'll continue talking about it over the next several days, weeks, and hopefully even months as well. But we need to get to our first break in hour number one. And when we come back, we'll talk about Brian Battee, former Auburn running back who got a pretty significant award this week, and we'll talk about that and why he got it after this, as we're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 as something pretty cool happened this week where former Auburn running back Brian Battee, who we know was involved in a shooting that left him in critical condition for quite some time, and his brother was killed in this situation. He has now been awarded the 2025 Wilma Rudolph Award yesterday down in Orlando. It's presented by the National Association of Academic and Student Athlete Development Professionals, a big organization. He was a finalist for the award, and it's an honor given to those who, quote, overcome significant personal, academic, and or emotional challenges to achieve academic success while competing in intercollegiate athletics. And so he has won, again, the 2025 Wilma Rudolph Award. And for a world nowadays that seems to always be filled with a bunch of negative news, and when this happened, it surely was, it is nice to see somebody like this who has made incredible strides as far as I've seen get honored for what he went through with Brian Battee.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. Even just being able to see, I remember the videos before Auburn played Alabama when he came and visited the team at practice, and the coaching staff didn't tell anybody. So you got to see, I mean, players' raw emotions when he was able to make his way onto the practice facility field. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. And man, some of these quotes that I was reading about this morning got me a little choked up, talking about how we can't even explain what he just went to and how hard it is to wake up and not have his brother by his side, because he's the one that just powers him, gives so much credit to his family, and says that, quote, he was with me every step of the way, every moment throughout my journey with football, talking about his brother on Monday, said he's the reason that I am who I am today. I owe him everything I got in me to keep fighting, to keep trying to recover all the way, because I am going to recover all the way. And so just being able to see things like that and to be able to see the steps that he was not told he was going to be able to have by some of these doctors. I mean, to be able to get out of the ICU, to be able to be the videos of him walking with a cane and eating true food. I mean, things that everybody takes for granted, things that he was told he might not be able to do again. Watching him now, being able to just accept an award and be able to talk about it, be able to be one of the vocal leaders on subjects like this. I mean, it's absolutely amazing to see.
It's crazy that this was almost a year ago.
Yeah.
I guess the shooting itself may have been, or it was on May 18th. And so, yeah, I mean, over a year ago that took place. And then, according to this article on the Montgomery Advertiser from Adam Cole, it says that it was June 15th that on 2024 that he was released from the ICU. It's like, I mean, crazy that it was already a year ago. And the fact that he has made such strides and been awarded something like this. Just congratulations to Brian Petit for, again, the 2025 Wilma Rudolph Award winner. Again, it is honored and given to those who have overcome significant personal, academic, and or emotional challenges to achieve academic success while competing in intercollegiate athletics. So congratulations to Brian Petit on his honor here in 2025. We're 30 minutes into hour number one, and when we come back, we're talking NFL prospects because there's a lot of big-name quarterbacks on this list, and the question is, where's Jackson Arnold? We talk about that and a whole lot more coming up next.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about on this Tuesday afternoon? You can give us a call. You can always shoot us a text in the on the line text box at 334-784-1067. And we're taking a look at the top quarterback NFL prospects coming up in this college football season, because this past year's quarterback class was not anything crazy. They said it was one of the worst we've seen in quite some time, top to bottom, in terms of just pure talent, depth, and numbers in the NFL draft. This upcoming NFL draft is going to be one of the better ones we've seen in quite some time because of all the big names, all the stats that we've seen so far, and what we're expected to see this upcoming season in the college football's calendar.
Yeah, when you're even that, matching that with guys that are choosing to stay their extra year rather than going in a year early, some fifth-year guys like Garrett Nussmeier being some of the ones, or one of the ones, the jump outs who very, very possibly could have gone first round this time last year, but decided to stick it out at LSU one more season and try and be that top quarterback draft spot. Some of these names that stand out already, according to this article, Cade Klubnik, Lenora Sellers, Drew Aller with Penn State, Garrett Nussmeier, as I mentioned, with LSU, sophomore Arch Manning, who, again, I think has all the talent in the world, but when it says things like Arch Manning, comma, who has just started two college football games.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't get that right now. But again, he might stay in college, but some of these other big-time names. Drew Aller leads the way. Carson Beck is also in there. Is there a name that stands out to you that you're really looking forward to seeing in college football this year?
I think one that Auburn fans will be a little, maybe not shell-shocked, but they'll at least they'll recognize the name, and it's Fernando Mendoza, who transferred from Cal and is playing at Indiana. I mean, it's like, wait a minute, hold on. You're talking about a quarterback that's playing in Bloomington that's on NFL prospects' radars? Apparently so. He torched Auburn a year ago. He did it inside of Jordan Hare, and so he's on this list, squeezed in there with Garrett Nussmeier and then your boy John Mateer, who, again, I think you and I are both on the same page that he could be a superstar in Norman, and as long as they stay healthy, they're going to have a really good team. You know their defense is going to be solid with Brent Venables. The schedule's brutal, but I think John Mateer at 6'1", 224, would you consider him undersized for the NFL in terms of what they're looking for? We've seen dudes be successful at that size, but you start comparing him to the 6'4 Arch Manning or the 6'2 Cade Klubnik or the 6'4 Carson Beck or 6'5 Drew Aller, right? I mean, those guys at least look the part of an NFL quarterback. Does somebody like John Mateer worry you at the next level that maybe he won't be successful?
5 or 10 years ago, I would say yes, but with the way the NFL is played nowadays and not needing the stand in the pocket, let me make sure I can see over all of the offensive and the defensive line. I don't think it's as important. He's 6'1", you mentioned. Guys like Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, they're both 6'2", and so I don't think that height comes into play as much. I would be more worried if he was 6'1 and a true pocket passer. Mm-hmm. Instead, he is the definition of a dual threat guy, has all of the arm strength in the world. I think the competitiveness will show out, and Auburn has a really good chance to see some of this highlights in Norman in a couple of months when Auburn makes the way to Oklahoma to take on that high-powered Oklahoma offense. It's saying on this article where he needs work with Washington State, he could afford to be a little bit late. He relies on the arm power to kind of overcompensate for the late reads. The arm confidence also allows him or leads him to passing up either the shallow routes for more challenging, deeper throws, things that you won't necessarily see or get away with in the SEC. But when you're sitting here talking about easy arm talent, can make every throw on the field, isn't afraid to throw it to the far hash, and is also a very, very effective runner on scrambles and design quarterback runs, you feel like that is a true today NFL type of guy.
Am I crazy to say or be the only one that isn't on the Garrett Nussmeier hype train yet? Am I stupid for thinking that?
I mean, we both put him, what, third?
Oh, hold on.
In the SEC quarterback rankings?
Hold on. I put him at third. I think I did on my list. And I think he's good, but he also turns the ball over a lot. And he didn't get sacked a ton a year ago, but I don't know, man. I'm not sold on Garrett Nussmeier yet. 6'2", 200 pounds. He's played college football for 18 years now. He's going to be good this year. Like, he's technically a fifth-year senior. Like, this is do or die for him. And I think that's why, if he does have a good year and LSU has a good year, then, yeah, I'll believe in him. But if the pressure gets to him, if he doesn't make the right decisions, if he costs them a game or two, I don't know. I won't be a believer in Brian Kelly at LSU, and I won't be a believer in Garrett Nussmeier in the pros, where he's projected as possibly the number one overall pick next year.
When you're looking at this LSU team, there is no shortage of talent that LSU went and either got from high school or got from the transfer portal to put all of the talent in the world around him. You're talking about a guy, again, you mentioned it, 6'2", 200 pounds. He is a little bit more of that pocket passer rather than somebody that's going to see daylight in the offensive line and try and break through and turn it into a 12, 15-yard run that some of these other guys do. They talk about his confidence and the daredevil mentality sometimes backfires. You feel like that's becoming a more prominent trend with some of these quarterbacks that like to take the risks, and more times than not, it works. But says against some of these better defenses, he had three games of two or more interceptions against ranked teams in 2024. And so a lot of those mistakes happen when he's flushed from the pocket. Because he doesn't want to tuck it and run, he continues to look downfield, which more times than not is a good thing. But when you take those risks and you turn the ball over, that's where a bunch of these NFL teams will draw a little bit of concern.
This article is on ESPN, and it talks about guys that are going to be at the top, and then there's a category called best of the rest. And basically, these names are ones that aren't there yet, but have every chance in the world to get there. Guys like Aiden Childs at Michigan State. You remember he's the Oregon State kid who is up there now. Talen Green at Arkansas. You're talking Nico out at UCLA. You're talking even Avery Johnson, who is now the Kansas State quarterback. And Haynes King at Georgia Tech. Miller Moss at Louisville.
I love Avery Johnson and Haynes King. I don't know if those are true NFL caliber quarterbacks day in and day out, but you talk about a team that, or a guy that people would love to have on your NFL team, a Taysom Hill type of guy that you could even possibly throw out at tight end, but a wildcat quarterback, fourth and goal, third and short, fourth and inches at the 50-yard line. Those two guys, Avery Johnson and Haynes King, you love the way that they play college football. The physicality almost reminds you a little bit of that Tim Tebow type of physicality that makes up for pure talent with just willingness to do whatever. You think those two guys are two of the ones that come to mind?
I think Mark Gronowski could be really good at Iowa. That's a kid that won a couple of national championships at South Dakota State. Unfortunately, he's going to an Iowa offense that averages 18 points a game, which is not good, by the way. And their field goal kicker gets 15 of those. Well, actually, he gets 18 of those. But regardless, I think he's a good quarterback. I don't know. I think there's so many of these guys who could be good that may or may not end up good. And then there's a list on this website or this article, too. Other QBs to watch.
Before we get to that, the last one of the best of the rest. Baylor's Sawyer Robinson, or Robertson, I apologize, says that he ignited their offense in 2024, finishing with the seventh best quarterback ranks in the FBS with an 82.9 QBR. 6'4", 220-pound quarterback, decisive passer who understands how to attack different coverage looks. He's effective down the stretch. He threw for 17 touchdowns and only 4 interceptions in their 6-game win streak. And it's something that we talked about yesterday off-air after the show. Baylor's hyping up this game against Auburn. I don't know how many people have seen it. But
as they should.
They very much should, but they're going to blackouts. It is going to be a night game in Waco. They are bringing out the black uniforms, asking the crowd to wear all black. And so if you're a fan of the uniform combinations, all blacks versus Auburn's all-white stormtroopers are going to look absolutely electric. And this Baylor team's hyping up this game against Auburn.
Yeah, and again, they absolutely should. An SEC team's coming to town, one that is looking to start the year on the right track. Auburn, of course, is that team. And then Baylor, I think Baylor has dark horse college football playoff goals this year. I think Baylor and Auburn have very similar goals.
I think they are very eerily similar teams.
Yeah, two teams that are just looking to get back into the national spotlight. I think Auburn's a little bit ahead of Baylor, but two teams that are looking to be home wreckers this year.
Who would have thought, and we could talk about this in 5 months from now, the winner of this game could see their chances in the college football playoff?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I think you win this game and you're hoping that it is a resume builder. You're hoping it's a win that you can look back on and say, hey, remember when we did that? If you're Baylor, it's, hey, we beat a team from the SEC that finished fourth or whatever the case may be. And if you're Auburn, it's, hey, we went on the road on a Friday night to start the season and we beat the Big 12 runner-up or the third best team in the Big 12 or, again, whatever the case might be.
A win like that could make your 9-3 record look almost like 9.5 and 2.5.
Yeah, I would say so. And so both of these teams are looking to get the season started off right. But you bring up Sawyer Robertson for Baylor, who is in that list of basically not there yet but could be. Then there's the massive category on ESPN's side that says other QBs to watch, and names like Ty Simpson from Alabama, Malik Murphy at Oregon State, Dante Moore at Oregon, Jalen Daniels at Kansas, Diego Pavi at Vanderbilt, and I've made it to the bottom of this list, and I don't see Jackson Arnold on there. And some people may say, well, where is he? Well, that's probably because he's not an NFL quarterback yet, and he's not going to be in the NFL draft class, I wouldn't think, this time next year.
You don't feel like there, I mean, it makes perfect sense just from the first 2 years of Jackson Arnold and the lack of success that the team had overall. I think that there are plenty of people out there that understand that This dude has everything capable of being that superstar. Both of us are fans of Josh Pate. He had high things to say about Jackson. It was either today or yesterday that it got posted, talking about how the entire situation at Oklahoma was just kind of doomed from the start. And then you actually get into the season and your top 14 receivers, it felt like, couldn't play because of injury, to where you're simply running out whoever you can just to line up on the field. Jackson Arnold's throwing a number 74 out there on the right slot. Everybody understands what Jackson Arnold is capable of. Josh Pate also mentioned that plenty of SEC coordinators have sat there and said this is going to be a very tough offense to stop if everything rolls correctly, just simply because of the talent on the offensive side of the football for the Auburn Tigers. And then you bring in that former five-star, the former Gatorade Player of the Year. You feel like everything is there to bring in that draft stock potential, and he could be one of those guys that light up the list next year, or, again, with a great year this year, could work his way into some serious conversations based off of how the season goes as a whole. A
lot of big names that are going to be floating around NFL draft boards for the next 12 months or so. I think this could be one of the best draft classes we've seen from the quarterback spot in quite some time. And then the question will be, how many come from the SEC? Can Jackson Arnold work his way into there? And look, Auburn fans may say, have a good year, but not a great year, because we want you again next year. Or they may say, ah, we're good, man. We got Deuce Knight coming in that would be a sophomore this time next year. So regardless, Auburn needs better quarterback play, and you're hoping that you get it from either Jackson Arnold or from Deuce Knight. We'll take our final break here in hour number one. Come back, give you some baseball updates. The Braves, MLB, crazy stuff going on. College World Series is set. We'll just talk baseball for a segment when we come back as we wrap up hour number one on the other side.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, the Tuesday edition of On the Line with myself, Jacob, him, Christian, and whoever else wants to be a part of this show. Oh. No, she doesn't. She left. So we got a couple of minutes left, and we're going to talk a little baseball, because there's a lot of baseball to talk about. Professional, college, unfortunately no high school baseball anymore, but the Braves are doing Braves things, I guess. How would you describe what the Braves have been up to, Mr. Griffin? How would you describe the Atlanta Bravos in the last, I don't know, week?
No, not even that far. I'm going to go back to yesterday, and I'm going to take the Brian Harsin method. We're 1-0. It's a 1-0
just
mentality.
Just watch us, baby.
After a 7-1 win over the Brewers, man, you are looking up. Who cares that you got swept by the Giants? Who cares that you gave up a 7 spot to the Diamondbacks, man? You are 1-0, and you found a way to put up a touchdown somehow in there. A 7-1 win. You get the chance to double down and move to like 2-14 in your last six. Not quite that bad, but how bad is it? 3 games.
In their last 10, I bet they're 3-7 in their last 10.
I bet it's worse than that, unless you see exactly what it looks like.
No, I'm not looking at it. I don't know. I mean, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt.
You got swept by the Giants. You got swept by the Diamondbacks. And then you lost 2 of 3 to the Red Sox.
Yeah, you did.
You lost 2 of 3 to the Phillies. So that's, what, 3, 6, 9, 12. You are 3-9 in your last 12 games. But just watch us. 1-0.
Just watch.
Worst to first, baby. Here we come.
Well, in other news around Major League Baseball, the Red Sox called up the top prospect yesterday. The Roman Empire has arrived, which I think is incredibly awesome. Yes, he went 0-4. He did have a walk and a ribby. And yes, he did have a terrible play in the outfield where he just let the ball go right through his legs. But, you know, can't. And the Red Sox lost in extras. Can't win them all, man. Not everybody gets to win their MLB debut, but the excitement is there. There's no doubt about it. And it always baffles me when a team decides to call up a prospect, and especially a top guy like him, how quickly things happen. Like, you get the notification, you get the update of so-and-so is calling up so-and-so. And then 2 hours later, you see the videos of them getting out of the car. Yesterday, it was Roman getting out of the vehicle outside of Fenway and walking through the clubhouse and seeing so many of the guys that he knows and stuff. It's like, it blows my mind how fast all that gets developed. Yeah. And he literally he started last night, which that's the cool thing about baseball to me.
It is. Some of the really cool videos that you see from like the AAA guys, and I've heard so many people about how that's why it's so cool to be a AAA manager, because you get to be able to bring the guys in and have those conversations.
News,
I believe he was one of the guys that got called out, not called out in a bad way, but called out of one of his games in like the fifth inning. And that was when they let him know, hey, go ahead and start packing your bags. You're heading up to Boston. I feel like that's a really cool moment. You got to watch him running through the dugout, giving hugs and high fives to everybody. So
better than the other way of when we've seen guys get traded mid-game.
Yes. Yes. Those are really, really bad moments. Wilmer Flores is the one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
For the Mets, him crying at shortstop, and then all of a sudden not getting traded, coming back the night later, hitting a home run. I believe it was a walk-off home or two. Awesome moment. Then he got traded like 3 weeks later.
Or, you know, the Braves calling up Craig Kimbrell, pitching one inning, doing his job, and then got DFA'd.
He actually got designated, sent back to AAA, and he said, no, go ahead and release me.
Yeah. Good for him. Good for him. That's a middle finger if I've ever seen one. Because, I mean, why do it? Well, I mean, why?
Just the experiment, I guess. And I guess, I don't know if there's been that conversation of, in case you are planning on retiring, let your last inning be with the Atlanta Braves.
I haven't seen anything like that, though.
That's what I'm saying. There hasn't been any sort of feel-good storybook ending. It was more of a, we're going to try it. And you threw 11 balls, topped out at like 94. Yeah, we don't want that.
Yeah, you're terrible. You're washed, is what the Braves said. So, in other news around baseball, as we just kind of rapid fire, Paul Skeens continues to be the best pitcher in the game. He continues to just throw 100-mile-plus-hour fastballs and continue to get strikeout after strikeout. But the only thing he can't get is a win.
He's 1-2 in his last five appearances with an ERA of 0.74.
It's ridiculous.
39 strikeouts in those five appearances. But yes, he has a losing record, even though his ERA is 0.74.
He's the best pitcher going on. I mean, one of, I'd say him or what, Scooble probably. I mean, the two guys that are probably the best pitchers right now, at least the Tigers
at least
are actually
consistently.
Yeah, at least they're winning games. I mean,
Tigers are good, man.
They are, unfortunately. I don't know what the heck Detroit, the city of Detroit, decided to do and just get good at sports, but I don't like it. I don't like the Lions being good. I don't like the Tigers being good. I don't like the Pistons threatening to make the postseason. At least the Red Wings still suck, but like, why did Detroit decide to get good at sports all of a sudden? They have sucked my entire life, and it's been amazing.
More importantly, the Racers.
Yeah,
beat the Duke
Murray
Blue
State.
Devils. We'll talk a little bit more about that in hour number two. Also, Texas Tech in Texas, 2.4 million views in Game 3, the most watched Women's College World Series game ever.
I think it's the most watched softball game ever. I mean, regardless, it's just viewership was insane for the Women's College World Series, so shout out to them. That was a rapid-fire segment. We'll talk more in hour number two, huh? Don't you dare turn that radio dial.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader as we are getting underway in the second hour of today's show. If you missed any of the first hour, the first 60 minutes of the show, you can always go back and listen to the podcast version if you missed the first hour of the show, or if you missed any other parts of the show, or any other shows that we have done. You can always catch up with the podcast on our station website at ESPNAU.com, where in that first hour, we talked about Auburn football as they picked up a couple of commits yesterday, one in the class of 2026, one in the class of 2027, which was a flip from Florida State, a four-star safety. So we talked about those two guys and kind of what the classes look like right now for Auburn and why you should not panic just yet. And we also went through the top quarterback prospects for the NFL and where Jackson Arnold is or is not on that list and how he can find his way there. All of that was in the first hour. A little bit of baseball updates in there, too. So that was in the first 60 minutes. If you missed it, go back and catch up with the podcast at ESPNAU.com.
And here in hour number two, going to start it off talking a little bit about Auburn basketball as the official roster numbers have come out, and also what to expect from this team. How long will it take for them to gel? Does Tahad Pettiford come back and be that glue guy? Do we expect success early on, or do we expect those early season struggles and then you hope that it gels by SEC play and then you're playing your best basketball come late February and into March? Also going to talk a little bit about what the rest of the SEC could look like, some big time names returning around the league. And John Rothstein also released a off-season top 45, and so we'll be able to dive into that a little bit. Also talking about the first look in Omaha, and for the very first time since 1957, none of the teams that made it to Omaha last year made it to Omaha this year. So there will not be a back-to-back, and could there be possibilities? What are the legitimate possibilities of a team winning their first College World Series? All of the lines have been released. All of the odds to win the whole dang thing has been released. So we'll dive into that a little bit as well. And some conversations on reseeding in Omaha has picked up a little bit of steam. And we have some solutions for that. So going to talk all about that here in hour number two. But before we get into any content, we want to remind you that it's brought to you by our friends over at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate the Orthopedic Clinic for sponsoring the second hour of our show here each and every day on ESPN 106.7. Christian Griffin, Jacob Goins with you in the studio. And Jacob, Auburn basketball has released its official roster numbers. And man, this team, the more that you look at, the more that you look at the paper, the on paper, the roster, the size, man, this team should be a whole lot of fun to watch.
I just think they're going to be exciting, man. I think they're going to be so different than what we saw this past year, which was get down the floor, play half-court offense, and execute at the highest level. And I'm not saying that this team can't execute or won't be able to execute, but it may look similar to the Bruce Pearl teams of old, where you grab a rebound and you just go. All heads are up, everybody's flying down the floor, and just get it to the open man, get it to the hot hand, and see what happens. Whether it's a three, whether it's an alley-oop, whether it's a pull-up jumper in the lane. I mean, I think you're going to see this look like a well-organized AAU team because of how athletic they are, how skilled they are. And until we see them completely mesh and figure out the style that they're going to play, Christian, I mean, maybe that's what they do early on in their non-conference games, because they're going to have some good games on there. We know a couple of the teams they'll play, Houston and Purdue, and they're going out to that NIL tournament in Vegas. Is that right? They'll be there as well with like 30-something teams.
It's Thanksgiving weekend, yeah.
Yeah,
and they're also going to Tucson to take on Arizona.
Oh, that's right, yeah. So, I mean, you're going to have good games on the schedule, and it's going to take a while to mesh, but I think they're just athletic as everything, and a team that could be really exciting to watch. And we know that there could be downsides to that. I mean, curious to see how they play defensively, curious to see what their hustle is on the defensive side of the floor. Do they take care of the basketball? Do they take good shots? Because we complimented this past year's team so much on that, how they had grown out of the previous Bruce Pearl squads of just taking a shot rather than the best shot or an open shot compared to a better shot. Can this team do that too? Tons of question marks, but just on paper, this team is really good.
Yeah, some official numbers. Tahad Pettiford will wear 0 again. Kevin Overton will wear number 1. Abdul Bashir, 2. Keyshawn Murphy at 3. Caden Magwood, the freshman, will wear number 5. Elijah Freeman, number 6. Keyshawn Hall, number 7. And you continue going. Simon Walker will wear 10. Omiko Oporum, 14. And Sebastian Williams-Adams, 33, and Filip Jovic will wear number 38. And just continuing to look at it, man, you're seeing freshmen, you're seeing sophomores, you're seeing juniors, you're seeing guards, forwards. I mean, there's so much talent on this team. It reminds me a little bit when you were hitting on it to start it, where you're talking about just allowing the pure talent to take over every once in a while. There's been a couple interviews with Tyrese Haliburton. We're actually, there's actually one on TV right now, and that was what came to mind. But he had player-only meetings with his team, and it was talking about, once you get a rebound, give me the ball and go. Yeah. I will get you an open layup. I will get you an open three. I will get you that trailing three. But give me the ball and go. And that could be something you see with this team, where you get two or three rebounders, and again, especially if this is a little bit of an undersized team, it might not be that one guy getting 14 rebounds a game like you could see with Jani Broome. It could be three or four guys crashing the boards, but you find your outlet guy, whether that's Tahad Pettiford, whether that's Kevin Overton, whether it's Magwood, Freeman, whoever the case may be, and go. Run. Get downhill. Turn offense, or turn defense into quick offense, something we did not see at all last year, which is very, very different compared to what you've seen with a lot of the Bruce Pearl teams, which is also what you were hitting on. I could see it very much so, where you allow the talent to take over a little bit more than it strictly being a, we're going to walk it up, give everybody stress just about 14 times a game for a 10-second violation, yep, because you're going to use all 9.8 seconds to get across the charity stripe. You could see 9.8 second possessions this year, where it is strictly you get the ball into the mismatch's hands, you allow them to get downhill, make the right play, make the kick out pass, make the one more, and use all of this talent against the other teams rather than using it against themselves.
Yeah, get a bunch of volume rather than, yeah, again, that's what we talked about this past year's team was, rather than getting 80 plus shots up a game, they would take 60 or 65 shots a game, but they were normally all good shots. And of course, a lot of those were in the hands of Jani Broome, your SEC Player of the Year and runner-up for National Player of the Year, which, by the way, I don't know if you noticed, Keyshawn Murphy, who wore 4 when he was at Mississippi State, took 3 instead of 4 for, you would hope, obvious reasons and what you expect to happen with the number 4 here at Auburn in however much time they decide to do something. But also something I noticed on Auburn's official roster that is out now for Auburn basketball, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on this, 334-321. 1390 on the phone lines, or you can shoot us a text in the on the line text box 334-784-1067. It's the fact that Emeka Oporum is the only official center on the roster. He's the only official listed center on this team. He's also the tallest by a couple of inches at 7 feet. 7 feet, 0 inches, 205 pounds. I mean, he's just, you can see him. I mean, he's tall and skinny. That's just what he is. And you start looking at some of these guys. Keyshawn Murphy, 6'10". Keyshawn Hall, 6'7". You look around at what some of these others are on the team. Elijah Freeman is 6'8". I mean, you see some serious heights on this squad. I mean, they're going to be very, very tall and lengthy, which you hope helps them on the defensive side of the floor more than it does offensively. But yeah, Emeka Oporum being the only center, quite a few forwards on this squad with Keyshawn Murphy, Filip Jovic, which, side note, him wearing number 38 is such a European number.
Yes.
I'm sorry, it's a gross basketball number. I know you and I are big on numbers in sports and uniforms and jerseys. Like, offensive linemen are supposed to be a certain set of numbers. Pitchers are supposed to be a certain set of numbers. Yeah. 38 it's just an awkward basketball number, but it's a very European thing. Look up the most famous 38s to ever wear, most famous players in sports. It doesn't have to be basketball, just Who in the world has won? There's probably gonna be an obvious one that I'm missing that has worn the number 38 in the history of sports. The most famous, or is there a 38?
George Rogers.
Is there a 38 in NASCAR somewhere?
Kurt Schilling.
You okay. Should have known yeah. That one. Yeah. I mean. Okay. I told. Okay. That's
Jeff Cross from the Clippers.
Gross.
He wore 38 for his entire career, playing 21 games.
Hey, a career is a career, no matter how big or small, right? So, all right, Curt Schilling, I guess that's good enough, but that just means Filip Jovic has to be the next great 38. That's what that means. He just has to be the dude as the number 38 is. Can you find anything else on the history of the number 38 in sports? Any more significance with that number?
The only person in the NBA wearing number 38 is Marcus Bagley with the 76ers.
So what you're saying is the number's pretty safe. It's pretty open.
I wouldn't say that it is in threat to being retired by the NBA anytime soon.
And you're not going to have to fight anybody on the team to you're not going to have to pay your teammates to wear number 38. Who was that? Was that Ashton Jeanty when he got drafted this year?
Daniel Carlson.
Yeah, and Daniel. Jeanty paid him in a nice car or something like that
paid
to wear.
The value of a SUV.
Of a nice SUV. Good for you, Daniel. Good for you. I would do it. Especially
if
I'm a kicker.
Now if you're
Absolutely.
Daniel Carlson, you just go and you look at all of the lowest numbers and you take that one and then hope that the Raiders or whoever draft another position and go, hey, you want to have another conversation?
I guarantee he could pick 38. I bet nobody's wearing 38 on his – well, I don't know. There are a lot of football players. Maybe there is somebody wearing 38 for the Raiders. See if somebody's wearing 38 for
– Total side note conversation right here.
I mean, it caught me off guard when I watch Filip Jovic or when I look at the roster and he's wearing 38. Like it just – It's like a quarterback wearing 84. Like, it just doesn't, I don't know, or a pitcher wearing, I don't know, what's a weird. Who was the pitcher we saw the other day wearing number one?
It was the Louisville
one?
Starter pitcher. He's
yeah.
number one.
Yeah,
and
you
it
didn't,
just didn't,
you didn't
match.
Like it? You didn't like him wearing number one?
I don't know.
What's a pitcher's number to you?
Oh. I don't know. I feel like I can see pitcher numbers.
I feel like pitcher numbers could be okay. As long as it's not, yeah, like 65.
I don't know.
I just feel like 38 in basketball is just weird.
Very
Even,
much
I
so.
Mean, 34 is fine. There's been a lot of good 34s. I'm
trying to pull it up.
Even 37 could be okay.
I feel it says 36 in the MLB. The most common jersey numbers for pitchers generally fall within the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Huh.
Which makes I mean,
I guess so.
And then I see 18 a little bit, but 1 through 9 is just not very popular.
You feel like that's pitchers. An infielder number. That's a shortstop number.
That's a shortstop, second baseman, center fielder number.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a first baseman wearing number one.
Oh,
that does not.
No, that
doesn't add up.
that
first baseman
weird.
Need to be double digits and like a 22, 23 type of
yeah,
number.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well, okay. Back to get back on actual conversation here. Emeka Opurim's the only center on this Auburn basketball roster. I know. If you
yeah,
just
that's
tuned
how we
in.
Got there.
If you just tuned in, you have no idea what the heck we were talking about. Emeka Opurim is the center. Lots of forwards on this team. We're going to get to the phone line. Somebody probably wants to chime in on this extremely valuable intellectual conversation that we're having. Keyshawn Murphy, Filip Jovic, Sebastian Williams-Adams, Elijah Freeman, Jeremiah Bowman, and Keyshawn Hall are all considered. Kevin Overton is also always considered a forward as well. Everybody else is a guard. So just a different makeup of this year's team for Bruce Pearl.
Yeah, and it's so exciting too because, I mean, you see Kevin Overton at 6'5". You mention it with Magwood, 6'2", Freeman, 6'8". You're not going to see that guy who gets 14, 15, 16 rebounds a game, but a guy like Elijah Freeman could average 5, 6 rebounds a game, almost like that Miles Kelly role where he could give you 12-8 or 12-6 just about every single game, and so many of these guys can do that for Auburn now.
Let's get to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with, and what huge point do you have to add to this incredible conversation we're having?
All basketball numbers should be 5 or less on both sides of the jersey. That is the rule. And do you know why that is? 55 is the highest number that should be in basketball at any level, whether it's foreign or domestic. Do you know why that is?
I guess not.
Okay, here is why. And now, I'm gonna back up a little bit.
Okay.
34 is the most universal number in sports because all the greats wore 34. You can be a pitcher. You can be I would love to see a quarterback come out at 34. That would be so awesome.
That would be pretty good. I agree.
Okay. But anyhow, the reason in basketball all numbers are five or less is what do you do when there's a foul call?
Yeah,
what
it's the officials.
They hold up the numbers. Yeah, they hold up their fingers.
Walks,
yeah.
He walks and he says, 53. That's a legitimate number. You can't do 78. You don't, and I mean, unless you're that dude that played for Auburn, you know, years back that had six fingers on each hand, then you could be 66, I guess.
You
but
would
other
think,
than him,
yeah.
There's no 66s in basketball.
I guess I've never.
30.
Yeah, I mean, man, we have watched basketball our entire lives. We both call basketball. I've never thought of it that way, but it makes total sense. But wouldn't you think in today's era, today's age, with the technology we have in 2025, that we would get away from the idea of the official throwing up his fingers to tell which number committed the foul?
No. No. Negative. That's like, okay, so we're going to let offensive linemen be number 10?
I love it. I mean, just pure chaos.
You're going to let them be number 10? But that is, I had my basketball, one of my basketball coaches when I was growing up, I asked him the question. I was like, why can't I be 28? He was like, because you're going to have eight fingers on one of your hands. And he just said it so matter of fact. And I was like, why would you need eight fingers? Because when you foul, 2-3. That's you can do it with two hands. 2-3 with a push in the back, other way, and you're done.
Yeah.
So that is why all numbers are supposed to be, and I believe basketball was invented here in America, and them crazy Europeans started using nines and tens, and then Dennis Rodman with his 98, and
yep.
Jokic is, 77, and all that crap. They're all foreign. Go back to your own country and play if you want 77. You can be 55. That was always the biggest guy on the team, too.
Yeah.
He was like the center. Not like the center, like the football center. Like, you know, 5'8", 265 wore the number 55.
Right.
That was the double extra large jersey because we only had 15 jerseys at the school. You couldn't pick your number.
That's incredible.
So, but that's why every number is supposed to be five or less, seriously.
Okay.
Is so that you can signal to the scorekeeper, you know, with two hands you can call the foul and you can do it.
So, makes total sense.
Now you know, you remember those little things, or you might not. You might not even be old enough for you, the little things on NBC that said, now you know, with the little doo-doo.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know. That's why every number's under five.
Well, there you go. Hey, yeah. We appreciate
Good show, guys.
Yeah, appreciate that. Appreciate the insight there. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Single-digit
number is not as difficult because you can
can hold that up, yeah. But, again, in today's world, you're telling me that we still have to have and I get what he was saying. You're supposed to be able to do in a quick motion, you know, 12 – offensive foul, you know, let's roll, go the other way. But you're telling me in today's era, we can't have something to where you could be any number in basketball, to where the official doesn't have to throw up his fingers and do all of that. I mean, that just seems like that's a little old-timey to me.
You'd hate for there to just have to walk up and be like, hey, foul was on Jovic.
Yeah, or think about it this way. We got to get to break. We got another phone call, too. We clearly have sparked an amazing conversation here on the show. Why is it that, and I know the stadiums are bigger and things like that, but football and baseball officials and umpires and referees are mic'd up, but in basketball, they got to walk over and use the worst possible microphone that they found from 1984, where it's just like, why can't they have a microphone that says when, you know, Tyrese Haliburton commits a charge, boom, he turns it on. Haliburton, charge, boom, we're going the other way. Why not be able to do that? Shooting foul on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah.
Two shots, boom, head to the line.
Rather than the, yeah.
You saw fouls are rolling on the
floor. Or you can do it like half of the officials do, and it's, hold on, before we go to break, it's more like.
After further review.
Yeah. It sounds like you're yelling from the other side
of
the room.
I feel like there are better ways to do it. I feel like there are better ways to operate than what we're doing.
That's going to be a free-for-all Friday show. We're literally going to talk about all of the ways to simplify everything.
Or just update it a little bit. Speaking of updating with technology, you know what we could do? There's a thing in baseball where... I knew it'd get him mad. Okay, we'll go to break as Christian's about to cuss me. We're going to get back to the phone lines when we come back. Come on in and be a part of whatever the heck this conversation is. 334-321-1390. We're back after this here on ESPN 106.7.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Let's get to the phone lines once again here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, 334-321-1390. John in Auburn, you're on the line, my man. What's going on?
Hey, how y'all doing? How y'all doing?
Doing all right.
Good day out here today. Hey, I have amid all the house and NCAA stuff, have a Auburn baseball, just maybe from a file from the complaint department here.
Okay.
If I may. So I'm a big MLB fan, as I think y'all are as well. And, you know, in MLB, we talk about it a lot in college basketball. Don't talk about it, I think, enough in college baseball, is roster construction. And the interesting thing in baseball, you know, especially for Auburn, is, golly, as a right-handed bat, you have that short porch and left with the green monster. Yet what I found frustrating, really, especially during the Super Regional, wind was galing out to left for most of that game, too. And you look and you realize, gosh, aside from Cooper McMurray, not a lot of right-handed power in this Auburn lineup.
Yeah, there were a lot of lefties, especially at the front of the lineup. I mean, what? In most of the games, Auburn had four or five straight left-handed hitters. I mean, I think it just depends on what you have and what you seek and what you feel is your greatest advantage. And I think the best Auburn hitters just happen to be lefties this year.
Right. Well, in the days of NIL, when you can kind of piecemeal a lineup together year by year, is that something you think college baseball teams will do more, is make a lineup, especially offensively, more toward their home ballpark? Or is that a little too far out in the weeds?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a really good question. You're seeing a bunch of MLB teams, which you're talking about. The Orioles are one of the teams that come to mind. They pushed the wall out in left field and now have that string full of young lefties, Gunnar Henderson, Holiday, Hergestad, all of those guys, because of the ballpark fitting that format. I think it's a little bit tougher in college baseball just because of the more dominant arms are more of the case right-handed hitter or right-handed pitchers, so you like being able to off-balance that. And I don't think that the ballpark, at least not at Plainsman Park, I know you have that left field wall, but I don't think it's as much of a priority than it would be if you were playing at a much smaller ballpark with one way or the other leaning towards left and right. I think it just more so happened to be like what Jacob was saying this year and then going forward. I mean, it could be a little bit of a change, but it was just more so the fact Auburn's bats were more left-handed hitting or more left-handed heavy when it came to power. So I don't think it would be as much of a priority at the college level than it is professionally, but it would be a very interesting topic of conversation, especially with some of these ballparks now having different features, having the short porches or having those green monsters all throughout college baseball.
And Christian, I know y'all are up against a break. I'll be real quick. One more point I'll make. Buck Showalter, when he was Orioles manager, did something super interesting to that point. Is when he took over as the Orioles, he made sure that every 10, 15 years ago, he made sure every minor league ballpark matched the dimensions of Camden Yards.
Yeah.
So, thank you guys.
Yeah, appreciate that. It's an interesting couple of points there. And my only pushback on that is, yes, you play college baseball in particular. You play a lot of games at home, but you still have to play on the road. I mean, you can build your lineup around your home ballpark of, you know what I mean, but you still have to go and play at Alex Box Stadium. You still have to go to Tuscaloosa. And if you have a good season, not great, you're going to have to travel in the postseason somewhere, and then ultimately you play in Omaha, right? And so, and then in the majors, I mean, you play everywhere. You play in every ballpark imaginable. So at that point, it's just getting the best that you can get. And that's kind of what John was talking about there, was in this NIL era, you can almost kind of build whatever lineup you want to have.
You definitely can. But yeah, you mentioned it, where you're playing a third of the home games in college than you are at the professional level, but you're seeing a lot more MLB teams do it. Again, the Orioles are kind of the ones that stand out, but some of these other teams are getting left-handed or right-handed bats. That was why the Yankees went out and got Juan Soto last year, obviously this year with the Mets, but with that short porch in right field, wanted a left-handed hitter. That's why now you have guys like Cody Bellinger. You have so many different guys that you can use to formulate success around your ballpark. I don't think at the college level, again, it's as much of a priority to get right-handed power bats versus left-handed, you know, on-base guys. And again, especially just because at the college level, when you think of dominant pitchers, more times than not, they're going to be right-handed. And so obviously that creates then the right-on-right matchup, then the advantage in the left-handed box.
Good question, John. Appreciate that. Talking a little baseball as the offseason for college is here. We'll take a break. Our bottom of the hour break bumped to just a hair, but definitely wanted to get John in and talk about that and answer all of his questions there on the baseball side. And speaking of baseball, we'll take a look at Omaha, as depressing as it may be. We will take a look at what the College World Series has in store. Some crazy stats, some fun lineups, and some betting odds for those of you that dabble into that sort of thing. That's all coming up here. We got 30 more minutes on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got about 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us for today's show. And I've had some great engagement on the phone lines and the text box, and you can be a part of all of that if you'd like to call in. 334-321-1390 or shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. Whatever is on your mind, we want to hear from you. And even though Auburn and Butch Thompson are not a part of it this year after losing in the Super Regional, the College World Series is set. Omaha is set to begin this Friday is coming up, and you start at, like, what, 1 o'clock? Is that Central time on Friday where they gave Coastal and Arizona the worst time slot? You kind of feel bad for Coastal Carolina, but I guess just given all the other matchups, I guess it just makes the most sense. But some really good matchups to start, and, of course, it's an eight-team tournament, not 18, 8 as in 7 and then 8. And then it is double elimination. So you do get at least two guaranteed games in Omaha. I know that's a big part of why fans make the trip, because it's not like a NCAA tournament game or a Final Four or the college football playoff where if you lose one, you're out. You do get two guaranteed in Omaha. And it's such a special event. It's such a special time. And you said it earlier, an incredible stat that has been put out there, the fact that for the first time since 1957, none of last year's eight teams who made it to Omaha a year ago are represented this year in the College World Series. That's incredible to think about.
It really is. It really is. And it goes back to a great game that happened last night that finalized the final eight teams, with Murray State beating the Duke Blue Devils. It was Murray State that jumped on the Blue Devils early, scored two in the top half of the first. Duke responded with one of their own. Duke then took a lead with one in the third, one in the fourth. Murray State then with one in the seventh, two in the top of the eighth. Duke responded with one in the home half. Things got a little bit chaotic. Duke had to work out of jams. The Racers had to work out of jams. But Murray State wins it 5-4, and they will make it to Omaha, Nebraska. And that is the true underdog. That is the true Cinderella story, as the world says it or sees it. They would say otherwise, but the true Cinderella story of this year's tournament. You mentioned it, Arizona and Coastal Carolina, 1 p.m. on Friday. And you look at that matchup now, and it just adds even more pain to the entire situation, because by no means are we saying that Arizona is not a worthy team because of what their offense and pitching staff did in Chapel Hill. But everybody expected North Carolina to win that Super Regional. And based off of Omaha, looking over the format visually, if you can think about it, there's eight teams, four on the top left, four on the bottom left, four on the top right, four on the bottom right. They do not match up traditionally on a bracket side of things where it works the left all the way down and it works the right all the way down. It is four squares
yep.
with a line in the middle. So you match up with the bottom part or the top part of your bracket. And so Auburn was the very, very bottom left. They would have matched up with the winner of North Carolina and Arizona. Also had Tennessee and Arkansas in there. And then I believe it was the... No, it wasn't. Who's the bottom left? Who the second right team? It would have been...
Wasn't UCLA, was it?
I don't believe so.
Because right now it's Arizona Coastal and then Louisville, Oregon State, right? And then the other ones is Murray State, UCLA, LSU, and Arkansas?
Yes. I don't know why it's not. Okay, it is Murray State. Nope, that is not right. This bracket format is actually all whack right now because they did mix it up a little bit. But on the graphic side of things, at least. But Auburn would have been matched up with the winner of, obviously, Arizona and North Carolina. Now, after Arizona wins, Coastal Carolina is minus 240 on the betting lines to take game one. You would imagine that being with Jacob Morrison, who Auburn saw in game two. Their ace, who is 11-0 on the year, just makes it to where Auburn-Arizona, you felt like you had so much more confidence than if it were to be Auburn and North Carolina. And so Coastal Carolina, well set up to work their way in the winner's bracket in game one, that being the Friday game at 1 o'clock. Louisville and Oregon State are the 6 p.m. game on Friday night. Oregon State is minus 160 to win that one because of the pitching staff. And so a fantastic game set up on Friday. On Saturday, it's Murray State and UCLA. UCLA is a big-time favorite. And that, obviously, and LSU and Arkansas. This is the game that has brought up some speculation, some talk, has brought some of the conversations that have been kind of lying down in the grass up into the air a little bit because the 3 seed versus the 6 seed nationally now have to match up in round one. One of these teams will work their way from the loser's bracket, and it's arguably the two best teams numbers-wise, odds-wise, to win the whole tournament, and this game is a toss-up. And so you're looking at it with the World Series odds right now. Arkansas is plus 195, LSU is plus 240. Those are the top two teams. And so you would imagine whoever wins this game, I talked about it yesterday, would be right around even if you were to dabble or to, what's the word,
dabble.
In the sports book side of things.
Yeah, if you want to sprinkle a little something on there. I look at these teams that are in the College World Series and mentioned this yesterday. I mean, teams like Arizona, Oregon State, UCLA, these aren't newcomers from the old Pac-12 or anything like that. These are teams that have been around and relevant in Omaha in the College World Series. Coastal Carolina is another example. Louisville is in there as well. Murray State being a pretty big outlier. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to look at this and say LSU or Arkansas are not heavy favorites, even if you don't look at the betting odds, just based off the body of work. I mean, these two teams seem to be playing the best right now. And sure, LSU wasn't clean on the way to the regional championship or a super regional win, but they both got it done. Arkansas looks like the best team, and I would probably pick them as the favorite. But if there's a team not named LSU or Arkansas that if you had $20 to put on to win it all, who would it be in the College World Series? Not LSU or Arkansas, any other team. For the value, for the path that they'll take, for the way that they're playing right now, a team not named LSU or Arkansas that you would pick to win the College World Series as of right now. We're still a couple of days away, but as of right now, who would you pick?
It's the team that came out of Plainsman Park.
Yeah.
It's the Chanticleers of Coastal Carolina.
They're so good, man.
Because
they're so good.
Of that first game, how important it is to win game one. Again, you're minus 240. You are very heavy favorites to take down Arizona. That puts you two wins away from the College World Series, the three-game set. Then all of a sudden you have those starters against whoever the case may be against the other teams. And we saw this offense come to life at Plainsman Park. We saw them do things 100% completely against what the stats, what the numbers, what the analytics show when it comes to the power numbers, when it comes to, well, can this team really hit real pitching, because they haven't necessarily seen it or have been completely challenged over the last month and a half. You're bringing a 23-game win streak into Omaha, and the betting lines are telling you that it's going to be 24, and you're winning your, or working your way in the winner's bracket. And then as I go to this same site, the On3 site, that's talking about the College World Series odds, Arkansas at plus 195, LSU at plus 240. Talk about the jump. But Coastal Carolina is that third team at plus 600. It's huge odds comparable to the top two, but they lead kind of that tier two from a popularity standpoint, and that would be my pick if I had to pick, other than one of the teams from the SEC.
I think I'm going to pick Louisville. I think the Cardinals are my pick, and I picked Miami to beat them, but the way that they played in the Super, the way that they played in the regional, remember they beat Vanderbilt in that regional after beating East Tennessee State. They turn around and beat Vanderbilt and then smacked Wright State. You look back in the season of what this Louisville squad was able to do, they beat Georgia Tech in a game. They beat Vandy in the midweek in this season. They also took down Florida State, who was number four at the time. They took a game against Clemson. They beat Western Kentucky, who was a tournament team. They beat NC State, who was a tournament team. They beat Kentucky twice. Who was a tournament team. They also beat, in the early part of the season, how about two out of three against North Carolina? How about a win over, oh, where did it go? A win over Arizona, 13-1. A win over Texas to start the year. Like, this Louisville team is no joke, and they can kind of do it in all ways. They can outscore you 13-11, or they can beat you 2-0. They just kind of have that swagger, and they put on a really good show for me in the Super Regional. I was wrong about them, and so if I had to pick a team that's not named LSU or Arkansas to win it all, I think I'm going to ride the hot hand of the Louisville Cardinals.
Plus 1,600 on those odds, seventh.
I like the value, too.
Behind Murray State, who's at plus 4,000.
Louisville has the second worst odds to win it all.
They do.
Give me that. Throw my $20 bill on that.
At Murray State, Louisville at plus 1,600. Arizona is at plus 1,400. UCLA at plus 850. Oregon State at plus 650. And then Coastal Carolina, LSU, and Arkansas.
Eddie King Jr. is awesome. He had a great Super Regional for Louisville. That dude can rake. He's got 17.
Got the curtain call.
Yeah, he had 17 homers on the season. He's got 60 RBIs. His slugging percentage, 770 right now. He's hitting 362 on the year. Eddie King Jr. is awesome.
Are you predicting, then, Louisville to beat Oregon State? Or does Louisville have to work their way from the loser's bracket? Because, obviously, the odds are favored a little bit more towards the teams that win Game 1. Because, again, you then have that buffer, again, other than the Arkansas-LSU game, where it kind of is a toss-up.
Mm-hmm.
Are you predicting Oregon State, who is the favorite to beat Louisville, and Louisville has to play with their hair on fire, with their back against the wall? Or do they pull off another big upset and then possibly play Coastal, and then if they can beat them, then you're a win away?
I'm going to take Louisville to beat Oregon State on day one and not have to work their way through the loser's bracket altogether. I will take them to – oh, goodness, let me think this out for a second. I will take them to beat Oregon State in game one. I will then take them to most likely lose against Coastal in Game 2, if that is how that works out.
And then they would beat the winner of Oregon State and Arizona?
They'd beat that team, possibly Oregon State again, or Arizona, whoever, and then work their way through and then get to a three-game set of a College World Series. So, yeah, I'll take Louisville to do it. If I had to pick a non-LSU or Arkansas, I'm still picking LSU or Arkansas to win it, because those two teams are just so dang good. But, yeah, I just think for the value and for a team that seems to really feed and build off of their emotions and momentum. Now, that was at their home ballpark, so maybe that had a little bit to do with it too. But, yeah, I think there's great value on the Cardinals. So give me them. They're a 38-21 team. They're still looking to get above the 40-win mark, so that could scare some folks. And the second worst odds technically to win it all, yeah, give me Louisville. Give me the Cards to make a run in Omaha.
Looking at it right now, they're essentially saying that Coastal Carolina should play in the College World Series, because the
saying
only
they'll
two
be favored
teams,
against everybody they play until they get there,
just because they're third, and they wouldn't play LSU or Arkansas until the College World Series because that's on the...
Until you get down into the loser's bracket, right?
I guess so.
If they were to lose, I don't know, man. That's the crazy thing. There's so many different combinations and how you do it. If you lose your first game versus your second game, and then you get all the way to the finals. I mean, there's a lot of different options on how this can be done. But I think there's good value in Louisville. And I mean, you could ride Arizona. Why not? I mean, that team just went to Chapel Hill, got smacked in game one, and turned around and beat North Carolina back to back games. Imagine if North Carolina was in Omaha. Would you pick North Carolina as your team who's not named LSU or Arkansas to make a run to a national championship?
Sorry, I didn't hear your question whatsoever. I was looking at the new bracket. So they did. They changed it. It is not the four squares anymore. It is, but you still play your left side of the bracket. So it wouldn't. So Arkansas and LSU are in bracket two. Mm-hmm. So Coastal Carolina would not play them until the World Series champion or the College World Series.
Hmm. Let's get to the phone lines before we get to a break. 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, it's Ty the Tiger.
What's up, Ty? What's on your mind, brother?
Man, just a couple things. First of all, I got Coastal Carolina. Odds are pretty good for them. You can get them at, I think it's 100, wins you 650. So I took Coastal Carolina.
Okay.
I'm not bitter they beat us. I think they're the hottest team. I think they continue it. They've got three of the best pitchers. You know, all we heard all weekend was, oh, that's versus the Sun Belt. We're going to rock them. Well, we didn't rock them. And I think they're going to continue it. I think they're on a mission. Man, let me tell you something, dude. That catcher, that kid is un-freaking-believable.
Yeah.
I mean, he was – I mean, just all the stats he put together. He hit two home run off of us. He was the second in the nation of the amount of steals being caught I don't know what the term I'm trying to say.
Is it fielding percentage?
Second in the nation of throwing batters out.
Picking them off. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, his batting average is close to 400. I mean, he's a leadoff hitter. When's the last time, even in college, you saw a catcher as a leadoff hitter? I mean, that cat is an X factor. I really like Coastal Carolina. My second team is going to be Arkansas. I think they win it. I think Coastal Carolina plays Arkansas. That's my pick for him.
Okay. Not bad.
You know, I really hate that we lost, but I mean, if we're going to lose, you might as well lose to the hopeful champion and the hottest team in NCAA.
So you're in that mindset. Because there's a lot of fans that don't, there's a lot of people that go the other way, Ty. There's a lot of people that say whoever knocks your team out, you want them to lose as soon as possible.
No.
Okay.
Butch did a heck of a coaching job. You know, I didn't even realize it, but we had one of the best third basemen on the bench. He was hurt, didn't even play the second half of the season. We had three true freshmen that actually played and started that weren't even supposed to play him, but they played they were playing lights out. And just, man, I mean, you know, I think it was the best coaching job Butch has done this entire actually 10 years of his coaching at Auburn. I mean, you know, and here we are looking at, we just signed three or four big, big guys in the NIL deal. We lost a couple, but I think we're going to get some traction. I think Auburn baseball will be a little bit better. But, you know, you can't be disappointed in something that you just started paying attention to when they started being good. And I'm a true fan, and I can say that, you know, I didn't go to any games until it was the playoffs. And that's my fault. So I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm so disappointed and we need a new coach and all this.
Sure,
that
sure.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's
fair.
Stupid.
Well, Ty, hey, man, we're up against a break, brother. I hate to do it to you. I appreciate you calling, though. Always good to hear from you.
As always, guys. War damn Eagle.
Appreciate the call. Ty the Tiger joining us here on ESPN 106.7. We do have to pay the bills, take our final break. We'll come back quickly, wrap it all up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday. It is not Wednesday. It's Tuesday. Whew. We're tired in this studio. Winding down on the
Monday.
Tuesday edition of On the Line. Yes, it's been a great show today on this Tuesday. And so if you missed any of it, go and check it out. ESPNAU.com. We've talked everything today. We've talked football recruiting. We've talked basketball. We've talked baseball. We've talked what numbers athletes should wear at what position and what sport. I mean, it's been kind of a free-for-all Tuesday, if you can believe it. So go and check it out, ESPNAU.com and our podcast center. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have Double D, Daryl Dappert for Double D Wednesday, plus some major changes in college basketball. The challenge is here. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more right here, 2 to 4 on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.